This is Decentralized, the Decentralized Trials and Research Podcast. We gather here with friends and guests to talk about the latest ways to make research and clinical trials around the world more inclusive, more accessible, more resilient, and more sustainable, all by using decentralized methods. This podcast is recorded live on Clubhouse every Friday, 12 to 1 Eastern, on the TGIF DCT show at the Decentralized Trials Club. You can join the live sessions and add your voice every Friday at noon Eastern time with the free Clubhouse app by following the Decentralized Trials Club. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform to get notified of new episodes. Following the club and subscribing will also help you stay current for any of the bonus content we may drop. And now, it's time to decentralize.
Hey, hello everyone, good morning. We're gonna wait just a minute, see if some more people join. I'm really thrilled today to be here with my co-hosts, Dr. Kalali and Jean, my colleagues at DTRA. How are you two doing today?
Doing good.
I'm doing fantastically. It's springtime, so that's always good.
Yes, sun is out.
Just before you got here, I was sharing with Suna and Patrick that on my run today, it was like nature was aroma bombing me. Because it's been very warm and I was just running through the scents of jasmine, wisteria, lemon blossoms. It was pretty nice.
That's a phenomenal start to the morning.
It was a good start.
I'm taking all the sun I can because this weekend I'm going to minus 40. So I'm going to try soak in the sun while I can.
There's a song about that from Sheryl Crow.
Okay.
Oh, yes. You should send him that soundtrack. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get started. We have lots of people here in the room. And so, Paige, when you're getting ready, this is when we're going to say, let's do this. So, good morning. Happy Friday. You've landed with us in the TGIF DTRA podcast session. We're usually here about twice a month on Fridays around noon Eastern time. Sometimes that changes if we have special guests from other parts of the world. But this conversation is all about what's happening in clinical trial innovation and the future of how clinical research is evolving. So our goal today is really to dive in a little bit on what's working, what's not working, what's coming next. And you can find out when we're going live on LinkedIn. If you're not live with us today, you can hear this on all the podcast platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify. In fact, there are a lot of episodes out there, and I'm always thrilled when I hear from people that that's how they found us. So today we have two very special guests with us from Amgen, and we'll spend about half an hour, maybe a little bit more, diving in with them on some questions on the topic. And then we're going to allow you to ask questions. You can do that by dropping them in the chat, or you can raise your hand, come on screen with us. That's the way we like to roll, because we're really inspired by what gets you curious, and we want this to be directed a lot by you. By the way, the topics that we cover are also directed by you. So if you have a big idea for a topic to come onto the podcast, it's you or somebody you've been watching or you just read a paper, just drop me a line at dtra.org or send a note to secretariat@dtra.org or DM me on LinkedIn. We really love to take your ideas and use them to generate the content for the podcast. Okay. That's the housekeeping. So today's topic is actually all about building bridges, how a team connects innovation to practice across an enterprise. Anybody faced that challenge before? Yeah. It's a fun challenge, and sometimes it feels like sometimes it feels like a tough one. So I'm really delighted actually to invite Suna and Patrick first to introduce themselves, and then we're going to dive into a recent experience that they led to try and upskill their organization. And when I say upskill, I mean that in a way of generating curiosity. Okay. So, Suna, how about you give us a little bit of a background on who you are, what you've done, where you've been, why you're where you are now?
Thank you, Jane. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about our organization as well as learn from you and the audience with their comments and questions. I'm the Associate Vice President and Head of Digital Medicine at Amgen. Our mission as an digital medicine organization is to accelerate evidence generation through innovative, pragmatic, and patient-centric research. We both sponsor digitally enabled DCT studies and provide also subject matter expertise to study teams with the goal of accelerating evidence generation. My background, you asked about that as well. I'm a medical doctor by training, and I'm in pharma nearly 3 decades now. I call myself as a medical affairs professional by heart, and during this discussion, you will also see how this shaped how we in digital medicine positioned and how we are collaborating with medical affairs teams for their studies. I have experience of country leadership, regional leadership, global leadership, and almost 2 years in digital medicine now, responsible from studies.
I'll ask you a quick question. Different organizations say digital medicine, and they mean different things. Can you just give us a very brief overview of in Amgen, what, and for you, what does digital medicine encompass, please?
Digital medicine is actually for maybe I will start with a bit context of how we are organized in Amgen. Digital medicine sits within the Chief Medical Officer organization, which is part of our broader technology organization that we call Atmos. And the way Atmos is structured is actually a big part of the study. Because we have Dave Reese as our Chief Technology Officer, who previously led R&D at Amgen for nearly a decade. And alongside him, our Chief Medical Officer, Paul Barton, sits right next to our Chief Information Officer and our AI and data science senior leadership. So you have technology and medical are really tightly connected in structure as well. And this is a huge driver in accelerating innovation and really thinking how we serve our patients. And being under medical organization gives us also a unique advantage because we have direct access to safety, regulatory, and medical affairs, which is much easier to partner on the design and execution of innovative studies. So we sit under Chief Medical Officer, and we are responsible for mainly this group's evidence generation projects, which is fitting very well with the DCT approach, especially for pilot studies. If we think about the FDA guidance as well, like assets with established profile of efficacy and safety.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Patrick, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. No, really, thank you all for the invitation. Excited to be here. I've listened to this podcast for, a couple of years, so it's surreal to be sitting here today. So thankful for the opportunity. But yeah, I'm Patrick Lee. I am a senior manager within the digital medicine team. I'm one of the first to, working with Suna, where we started from a team of two and have grown considerably since then. My background, preclinical research. I'm a stem cell biologist. I worked with human induced pluripotent stem cells for many years, and that was kind of the focus of my graduate degree. After graduate school, I kind of had a change of heart. Wanted to find something that could help me, have a more, for me personally, more tangible impact on helping patients. And I think my journey in DCT has always been right time, right place. Right when I graduated, a very notable startup in DCT, I'm sure many on the line may know, was hiring. And that was my front, my door, my first opportunity. I joined as a clinical research coordinator, and really learned the ropes of not just clinical research, but, decentralized clinical trials. It was a really fun experience, and naturally, with any startup, you're exposed to so many different things: clinical operations, technology, regulatory, data management. So it was really being thrown into the deep end. Spent some time there as a coordinator, project manager, and then moved on to another DCT startup to help build their clinical operations capability. Before joining Amgen, I figured, spend enough time on the vendor side, saw a lot of the questions and the concerns and the resistance, and just really how sponsors were seeing DCT. So I wanted to get a better understanding of that. And joining Amgen has been so far a great experience. I joined in the capacity of supporting protocol development and design for oncology programs. And like I said, right time, right place. I think immediately when I joined, I connected to colleagues internally here that were working on DCT. And I just think you could just never get away. One thing led to another, and connected with Suna, and it's just been really fortunate to be able to work with her and joining, as she mentioned, the ACMO organization in digital medicine to help build this capability. Bring my past experience, network, and what I know to Amgen to, build something new for our patients.
Wonderful.
So, just a little acknowledgement here that first, Patrick is one of the few people that I know who is a DCT native. And when I say that, what I mean is your entire clinical trial experience started from the frame of this is possible, we can make it happen, and it's the norm. You're an outlier. And I love that about you. The other acknowledgement is, Patrick had the opportunity to work directly under one of my prior mentors who wasn't a DCT native, but could see that that was going to be where things needed to shift. So your right time, right place mantra really hits home for me, and I'm so glad that you're with us today.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you, Jane.
Okay, I'm diving into some content here with you, Suna. So, well, actually, just about a month ago, I had the opportunity to spend some time with you and some of your colleagues a little bit further south of here. And you brought together around 50 people who are really deep subject matter experts in their own domains. Then we decided, well, gee, how could we help them understand there might be different ways of doing things? So first, what made you decide it was the right moment to have that conversation? And how did you think that it would be received to hear more about DCTs from your medical colleagues?
Yes, Jane, you know about my background and I shared with the audience here. I'm a medical affairs professional. I wanted to work on research. It was my desire, like it was really an inspiration for me to work more on the clinical trial side. And when I started with this DCT approach, and I was fortunate to have Patrick with me, I felt how it is relevant actually for medical affairs, this DCT approach is. Medical teams are already very close to patients and healthcare providers, so they are increasingly involved in evidence generation beyond traditional trials. Medical affairs are asked to deliver insights in a much more agile, real-world context, and their importance is evolving significantly by time. And they play a critical role for launch preparation and after launch preparation. And during this time, there are many unanswered questions of clinicians and payers. But at the same time, we kept seeing the challenges of conducting trials. They are becoming more complex, takes time. So medical affairs need solutions for evidence generation faster and in more real-world setting. And in parallel, DCT approaches are becoming much more practical. The options are increasing, the operational models are becoming more proven. There's growing support also from regulatory perspective as well. So when we look at medical affairs needs and what we can provide as solution, it just clicks. They are already close to patients, healthcare providers. They're increasingly being asked to generate meaningful evidence, not just support it. So it felt like we are introducing, it doesn't feel like we're introducing something entirely new, but connecting solutions that is already there. And at this time, we believe that it's the right time to introduce these approaches and train our teams so we can collaborate on projects more efficiently.
So you kind of decided it was right time, right place for their needs and your capabilities.
Exactly.
Got it.
Can I pose a question about that too? I'm coming from the integrated approach to things in big pharma. And when I think, Patrick, what you came from and then coming into pharma, I'm assuming in the med tech world, right, in the smaller organizations, it's not such a divide between different organizations, different parts of the same organization. In my own experience across several different companies, there was always this little bit of a space in between medical affairs and everything else we were doing across R&D. Organically, it didn't make a lot of sense to me. When you started to bring your colleagues together, was there any resistance? Is this gap between the people that actually create the tech and understand how the tech can work for patients and the people that actually should and could be using them in the work that they do? Do you think that's just unique to big organizations, or do you see that it's a problem across, whether it's a small organization or a bigger, or is it a natural progression that we're bringing medical affairs closer to the work so that they can actually have the impact that to me seems natural, right? So just curious what your thoughts are about that, and was it accepted easily across your organization?
No, thanks for that. I don't believe that the space, the gap is necessarily unique to DCT. I think it's just naturally something you're going to be encountering anytime you're building a new capability. And I feel like, but that to that point, the gap gets more and more complex and nuanced the larger the organization. At the end of the day, what's critical is that, we recognize that is to be able to recognize that there are usually more stakeholders than you initially expect, who are impacted. And that's important for us as digital medicine, as the change agents, really to demonstrate that understanding, of what those impacts are and guide us on how to approach each function individually and cater kind of our messaging and our implementation strategy, to those functions, like our medical colleagues. I think we wanted to be really intentional about how we approach them, and the messaging that we had. From my past experience, when I was building DCT capabilities on the startup vendor side, the focus, of course, and we all know it's for DCTs to build solutions to bridge gaps, between the solutions and the patients that we're serving, right? But, as time went on, you started seeing that there's a need to bridge gaps with more stakeholders, whether it be the sponsor, the investigator, the site, our own internal groups. We had regulatory, medical, tech. You started pulling the string and seeing, oh, there's a lot more we need to figure out. It's not just about, of course, it's always about the patient. But as we're building the capability, there's more to it that we need to ensure we're meeting, to build the best possible capabilities. Similarly, at Amgen, I've been a part of building two new capabilities here. And that experience has just taught me the importance of collaboration, understanding gaps, tailoring communication. So really how we approached it and digital medicine is, early and often we brought on a cross-functional team of, I think, roughly around 15 different functions early on, just to identify those gaps, those blockers, those institutional blockers that, we really needed to think about collectively, and just how to build a really thoughtful DCT machine here.
Can I follow up on that question?
Yeah.
And either one of you can certainly jump in. I'm curious about in that interaction within your own organization with people, either you knew really well or you didn't, were there any perceived and real misunderstandings? Was there as much curiosity as you hoped there would be? Was there any fear? You know, all of the human things, right, that make us a little hesitant at first to do something, or was there really an openness across the newer colleagues, right, to learn and understand what the impact could be? I'm just really curious about that from my own perspective, but just how did you experience that, and how did you overcome any misconceptions, if there were any? You know, I'm not sure. For both of you, I guess.
Sure. Sina, do you want to go for, I know Sina, you've been in the task force longer, and then I can kind of follow up.
Yes, the short answer is there were different approaches to DCT modalities. So some excited, some have the historical unfortunate examples that comes up, the same studies, the same failures repeatedly. It's a change management. We're a new organization. It's just 2 years, almost 2 years, that digital medicine established with research capabilities in Amgen in medical. It takes time, but I believe we have done a good job of gathering this task force together and bringing the people from. Patrick says 15, 15 or more are really too many people. Who are we selected the people who are open-minded, had positive experience maybe before Amgen, or open to try new things, we call them the task force, DCT task force, and for Amgen, not for digital medicine medical, but Amgen task force. I believe this accelerated the development. And this task force is led by Patrick. So, Patrick, you can give more insights here.
Yeah. No, thanks, Sina. Yeah, to that point, Sina brings up a great point. It's and that's natural with all of us as, we're working on our projects. Yeah, scar tissue is real where, and like we'll talk about it in a bit, but just implementation of DCT is it's not easy. There's a lot of learnings. And I think with those learnings, I think was understanding all the preconceived notions and understandings of DCT and its history at Amgen. I think that was a challenge in itself in a good way because it really helped us open up and talk about, collectively what we could do to build better from that experience. And I think what is encouraging from this task force is that openness, that collective openness and excitement to build this capability. But we build in a more thoughtful way. We take the time now. Let's really process how we want to approach this, and really make it our own. So I think from that end, it really did, we were able to get a lot of buy-in once we kind of worked through a lot of that past experience, and those kind of past feelings about DCT.
That's really fascinating, Suna, that you said you chose the task force for people who were kind of open to change. I guess I would say in only organization going forward, frankly, everyone has to be open to change, right? With all the changes coming. Did you find, are there any approaches either of you took to try and ensure that people were more open versus being on the defensive? Is that something you worked on in some way?
Actually, my approach has been still continuous. It's managing it as a change management, and it's not different than anything you want to change within a big organization. Based on my previous experience, honestly, working in business and medical affairs, this change happens all the time. And there are tools, there is a methodology to approach this change. It's nothing against DCT, it's just how you manage this in a more efficient way and alignment with the people. So it starts from leadership. So people should see that there must be leadership support and reward when you try these new things or new approaches. The buy-in, rationale. So just, I'm not going into details of the change management, but when you apply that, it helps. And one of the rules is just starting with the people who are willing to try new things, who are open to that, and also the people who has the organization's credibility among other colleagues, that when they say, yeah, we can do it, experienced people, senior people a little bit, the others will be more willing to change and take the risk.
Great.
So let's flip over a little bit now into the workshop and what happened and what you're seeing now. I'll set like 30 seconds of context. It was such a fun opportunity to build this workshop with you both because, first, it was a privilege to be invited to try and help build this activation energy. You know, like you're back in the lab, Patrick, and we're going to add the activation energy so we catalyze something to happen. And because we knew there were different levels of readiness in the room, we decided to use a little bit of a myth-busting framework with some of the core questions that come up a lot and a little bit of data to support whether or not the myth was accurate or not. And then Patrick and his team built a really cool framework to use within the workshop. You don't have to share anything about that if you don't want to, but I loved the way that you really encouraged the people in the room to roll up their sleeves and get involved right away. So it's 4 weeks out. How is it different post-workshop? What are you seeing and what's happening?
I could take that. I think we're seeing the excitement during the workshop and the summit, kind of maintained. We saw excitement during the workshop. We had colleagues coming up afterwards. And again, before I go on, really big thank you to Jane and DTRA for the partnership on it. I think it was really important for us to bring like an external voice to the workshop itself. So I think it brought a great change of pace, and I think it really inspired our colleagues to kind of think outside the box. But yeah, we had our medical colleagues break off into teams, and from those discussions, we were walking around the room and you could feel just the excitement, the engagement, when they were given the opportunity to think outside the box. Like, we gave them the prompt, like, Joe, processes aside, SOPs aside, if you were to design something, introduce new elements, how would you approach it? No idea is wrong. Just put a pen to paper and put some stuff down as some ideas. And, we're seeing teams, really reach out to us with study concept ideas, general questions about DCT modalities, digital health technologies, and how they can be used to answer, key evidence questions, or even if they want us to help assess a DHT. I think, again, part of our concern was just with that excitement taper off after the summit, and when people are going back to their day-to-day, in the beginning of the year, it's a mad dash just to get our priorities down and really execute on our goals. But I really feel that that workshop d ignited like that inner innate desire for innovation here. And just as Suna mentioned in the beginning, with just the institution of the Atmos and the OCMO organizations at Amgen, really there's a heavy emphasis for us as an organization to evolve and adapt alongside the changing landscape of technology. And this includes how we approach our clinical trials. And I think our, I know our colleagues see that. And this workshop was just kind of that springboard, that activation to get that conversation started. So, at least, just to answer your question, just post workshop, we're seeing that energy maintained. And it was just a really good catalyst for us to move forward.
I can imagine as clinicians in the room, and I see, there's a physician's perspective, there's a clinician's perspective, and you want to have engagement. Was there ever a point in the conversation where safety became one of the issues that rose to the top? I mean, I have a pharmacovigilance background. I took care of patients myself, but so much has changed, and the technology really offers an opportunity that might not be the first thing we think about in terms of actually maybe we can embed a higher level of safety if we do this right. Are there ways that you had conversations that kind of helped the thinking around patient safety first, in because of the nature of the people in the room and what they bring to the table? And how did those kinds of questions show up? Or when they showed up, were you surprised in how they showed up? I'm very curious about that from a just a holistic healthcare provider perspective.
Yeah, if I may answer this question, is actually we see these questions as a great sign. So they come all the time, and it shows that people are really engaging, and instead of closing the doors, they're very openly, honestly trying to understand and learn more. And it also helps us because that's how we identify risks early and proactively mitigate them. I was talking to our legal team the other day, and I said that I like them in a way that they help me to see where I need to take proactive action. So it's always I see an opportunity when I receive questions, and if it is creates an aha moment, we value it a lot. It's not me, but our team. Patient safety, like you say, is the utmost priority, and it's always the first question we receive. How our safety signals will be captured, monitored, how patients will reach out to the investigator, or if something comes up, problem, how the safety will be managed, adverse event will be managed. Drove always data flow diagrams. So this helps. Patient journey maps, this helps. So visually showing, how it will be, moved. Technology platform testing makes it much easier to give confidence. And also, for first time try of an innovative approach, we are very intentionally about starting small. So we focus on like non-product studies, test and learn in a controlled, relatively safe environment, and then build from there. So it's also taking deliberately small steps, providing value, maintaining rigor, and then gradually moving to more complex designs. Always, of course, patient safety in mind.
Proving with the evidence, right? Little by little, incremental, we learn, right? That evidence
Exactly.
generates. Fantastic. Thank you.
So there's also a natural tendency for people to go back to what's familiar. How do you think we can work to try and have people integrate that sort of new ideas as opposed to going back to what they used to do?
Yeah. Oh,
Go ahead.
no,
Yes.
Sina, go for it.
I will just add that the approach should be always starting from what is the benefit of implementing this DCT innovative solution to the design? And if everyone understands the teams that why we are doing what for patient inconvenience or accelerating the study timeline. So why we are doing what, it also helps the acceptance and also increase collaboration. Otherwise, just approaching let's do a DCT is not fitting well, honestly, with the study teams because they feel that we just want to implement a methodology and innovation that works for our purposes. But most importantly, if we can find a mutual alignment on the need of this new approaches, we see works better. Patrick, what would
Yeah, no,
you
I think you summed it up perfectly. And I think what, that natural pull is a really interesting concept because I think, just I think what we're all seeing with DCT adoption as a whole, it post-pandemic is that kind of trend. There was a reactive need to start adopting more decentralized elements in a short amount of time. And during that course of time, you just I think all organizations are seeing a lot of the challenges and obstacles starting to pile up, and that added burden, understandably, on everyone. And really, that bar, that standard, the set of standards for DCT was just set very high, right? So I think naturally, given the challenges of implementation, you saw just a general shift back to what was familiar, what was comfortable. So I think, Suna mentioned really just driving that value. And I think it's important for us as digital medicine, to promote, and what we try to do is promote that culture of really intentional preparation, being adaptable, and within our organizations, just so that, we're prepared for any challenge. We are not immediately turned off if there's an issue. But one thing, I think Suna's really instilled in us is to think of a different way approach to achieve our goal. If, we hit a wall, let's find another route to go with. And she was alluding to that with kind of the types of studies we're going with is, what are always trying to find different areas of opportunity to gain some traction.
I mean, I think if we lead with empathy and think about how people are actually doing the work, if we're in their shoes, right? I mean, to me, it seems that what we have to prove to them is they're in their work. They've got a very dynamic, some would call chaotic, external environment at the moment, more than ever. Studies are more complex than ever. So if I'm in those shoes and you tell me to do something new that I'm not familiar with, unless it's going to make my job better or somehow have a big impact on timelines, because everything, timelines are not getting any longer, their studies are not getting any simpler. So I fully understand when people are sort of shown new things, we really have to prove to them this is something that, will actually improve things as opposed to give them more burden, right?
Definitely.
Exactly. I can give also an example here. I talked about that we are relatively a new organization, but even in that short time, I believe we have made meaningful progress. We completed one fully decentralized trial. We have two ongoing studies expected to read out this year, another two in protocol development, more than five at the key design element development. So you see the momentum. One study that is fully decentralized, which is led one of our colleagues, Bethany College, is demonstrate that we recruited 200 patients in 8 days. So this is an important achievement, actually. When you share this with the others, people really interested and would like to understand how you did it. So from there, we are moving to the second study, a little bit more complex. And then, in the horizon for the next year, we have planning more complex or with brands, and it becomes like learning by step by step approach, which is helping people to give confidence and also. It creates the environment of people coming to us instead of we are trying to pull people to our work.
So I'm really going to double click there for a sec, but I'm also going to speak into the room. If you have a question, raise your hand or drop it in the chat because I know some of you out there have questions. And this is not meant to be just our conversation. So feel free to dive in. All right. So I love that. Now you have examples that are getting people excited, and you're building this capability through a real intentional methodology. Let's talk a little bit about that leadership support you mentioned before, because you talked about it, but how is the leadership support actually helping to move people from curiosity to implementation in your customer group?
I think that what really tips someone from this is interesting to I want to use this is when it becomes real and relevant to the work, right? First, it has to really connect a problem they are already trying to solve. But at the same time, if you think about the leadership, people want to see that, yes, there is a problem that is acknowledged by leadership, and there is also a support from leadership to try these new things. Because the new things brings also the risks and failure risks. And when you see that leadership and more open management is more open to take these risks and to try and test learn approach, it gives confidence to the people to the colleagues. But at the same time, there needs to be a buy-in and these examples that will also motivate leadership. Okay, it's working and it's actually an approach that is serving for the purpose, for the business outcomes at the end. So I believe leadership plays a very critical role here, but at the same time, the examples, the buy-in of the teams, with the mind of like it's clearly helping for me to solve a problem, approach, makes a difference, for the acceptance and this change.
So it's that combination of leadership supporting the hypothesis, you and your team generating the evidence to support the hypothesis and show the value to the business. So it's sort of like what is that called? A virtuous circle.
Very correct, yes.
I'm going to jump onto that thread that Jane just started. So you're talking about the internal evidence, right, that you're proving to your organization within your organization with support from DTRA, obviously conducting this workshops, which is fantastic. So you've demonstrated that your Amgen has a commitment to external collaboration. They believe in it. You're here, you're sharing your stories. Would you say that that for your leadership, is it a combination of internal showing of evidence through what you're doing with the support of one of your external collaborators, DTRA? Or is there an equal interest in learning what your peers are doing externally? Is there a combination of both? Is one stronger than the other? Have you seen a shift over time from when you first started thinking about digital, right? And the reactiveness because of COVID versus where we are 6 years out or so. Is it really a combination of both? Was one a stronger driver for that change? And I would imagine, like most of our organizations, whether it's tech or other, that you've had a flow of people coming in and out, bringing their knowledge and expertise. So I'm just curious to see, how do you see external collaboration fitting into your objectives and helping you succeed and continue to succeed going forward?
Yeah, and one of our our primary goals in digital medicine and with the task force we're leading is that we do think it's really important for us to constantly stay connected to what's happening outside, whether it be what our peers are doing, what the new technological trends are, what the new regulations and policies are coming out. I think we've really been intentional about that. We even have close partnerships with our global regulatory policy team with Kevin Bugin, and it's just bringing in that external knowledge. It's invaluable. And I think we're seeing also, Jean, as you mentioned, just like kind of an influx of a lot of new voices within Amgen that have seen DCT that are really advocating, and that helps a lot. But back to the point about the collaborations, like I mentioned, it's been a priority for us to constantly keep our team in the loop about what's happening in the outside world, to really better inform our approach and help us stay current. Just a little plug for DTRA. I have to do it on this podcast, but I've been a participant in the various like circles, initiatives, forums, annual meetings, and it's helped at least shape my worldview of DCT adoption. And just being able to engage with industry peers, site leaders, vendors, regulatory leaders, and just learn about their approaches, successes, and pain points. I think that exchange is extremely valuable in what we are trying to bring in to our organization. When we were Sun and I were talking about this workshop, she came up with the idea, hey, let's bring in somebody. And first thought was, DTRA is a perfect organization. We're a member, and just I think there's no better organization to bring in to lend a new voice to our team. So I just just having been at different organizations prior to Amgen building these capabilities, I've noticed just that the same learnings are being constantly brought up, which is great. But also, it shows that we're hopefully, we're potentially reinventing the wheel, across different organizations. So I think that's why it's really valuable for us to stay connected. And we don't develop that tunnel vision here. And we just have a more holistic view of how to, build these capabilities. But
So
although like nothing really beats like that feeling when you reach an aha moment by yourself, but I still think it's important
yeah,
for us
and
to stay
thanks to
connected.
Amgen for sharing your story because sometimes that doesn't happen and it's so important. So thank you both for that. Yeah, absolutely.
So Patrick, I'll just follow up with that for a minute. I think the point you make about kind of being aware of what's outside. I mean, there's so many historical lessons in this, even starting from when Silicon Valley started their culture versus the East Coast sort of traditional tech companies. But within pharma, there's always a spectrum, right, between companies that are very insular, they don't like anything not invented here versus, others who are much more looking out to other organizations. I think most organizations have kind of realized that, the future of drug development is really collaborating around the ecosystem and learning from that. So I think that's all good. And I do agree that, being able to interact with others, seeing what others are doing is very important, even to show to your own management. Sometimes, if you're in a very traditional organization, this is not Amgen I'm talking about, being able to show in those organizations that the thing that we think is impossible inside someone else has done, is really powerful, right? So I think that's really useful.
Agreed.
Thanks for the shout out for DTRA. It's work that we love, and it is inspired by and shaped by you and other members like you. So thank you for that and for all of your contributions. So I'm going to dive into my little pragmatic innovator role here. That's what Craig calls me. And ask you a little bit about getting practical. So let's say you have a medic or somebody new in the medical affairs team, and they're a little bit curious. What steps do they take to connect with you? How do you try and make it easy for them? How do you pull from concept to collaboration?
Oh, sweet. I
Sunan,
think you're on.
you're muted.
Oh, sorry. I would say the first step is actually pretty simple. Starting this engagement conversation very early, even at the evidence generation need identification step. So we tell them that if you think about if a DCT can help, the best thing you can do is just reach out to us at that moment. It can, it doesn't, your question doesn't need to be fully formed. It can start with, here is the question we are trying to answer, or here is where we are seeing a challenge in our study or evidence generation. We say that we often say that if you identified a evidence gap that requires primary data generation, especially for a product already established efficacy and safety profile or close to the development or launch phase, that's a great moment to connect with us. And this is also aligned with the change management principles, right? If we go to the people and say that, okay, I want to see your protocol, where do you see the value, this and that, detailed questions, there is the risk of really making people afraid and just hesitant. So it's better to partner, especially if it is their first project and first collaboration with us. Patrick mentioned about that we are lucky to have a regulatory policy team who is experienced and supportive of DCT. So we can assess very fast if any approach is both feasible and compliant. We have clinical operation experts with DCT approaches within our team. So this is also helping very fast assessment of if this evidence question, research question can be answered with the DCT approach. I want to pause here and Patrick, would you like to build on that because you have been working on this for many months now?
No, thanks, Suna. Yeah, I think to your point, fully agree. It's great to have a group of SMEs and experts internally, and who can serve as connectors. We know everybody's stretched really thin nowadays, just given how much there is to do. So it could be hard to get time on someone's calendar to ideate. So we really, set up to develop toolkits and bring in some resources, collate resources to upskill also our organization on DCT. And these are tools that, medical colleagues, clinical operations colleagues can access, to really help form their ideas, as that Suna brought up, whether no matter what stage they're at, it helps them kind of shape some of their ideas and maybe better equipped to come to us, to pitch some of these ideas and see where we can help. And of course, being digital medicine, we wouldn't be digital medicine without having like AI-based tools, and that's something we're building as well. But to a point, I think the key is accessibility of either us or the tools for our team.
I'm very impressed that it took us 51 minutes to get to AI. So that first of all, congratulations for that. Also, I felt very old when Jean told us we were 6 years post-COVID. My God, Rose
I had a pause. I paused there for a minute, right?
was
Yeah. Yeah. Patrick, I'm just going to really quickly, because you brought up the concept of tools and solutions throughout, and Jane, I know this isn't scripted. So have you addressed the tube stop? And part of the question before I thought about the tube stop and whether you used it or how you see that evolving over time is when, and I was reflecting on both of your comments. What makes it stick? Like the changes that start, the momentum, right, that you have, because I'm all about momentum and that's the word of my year for 2026, right? Does having access to these kinds of tools that you've helped to create and that you can help modify over time, in your opinion, help that stick, number one? And does the, and I love this about the tube stop because I, from my own experiences, I look at everything from the asset level and I think that early planning, that strategy that may help over time should be addressed early on at that program level. Yeah, they're always going to get into the granularity at the protocol study level where all those unique things need to happen. Do you find having that approach of a systematic way where you can look at digital applications, decentralized capabilities at an asset level helps for that long, and maybe it's too soon, right? You're saying you're a new organization, digital, blah, blah, blah. But does that help when you think about the future and what's going to stick and how you can continue to pull that thread over time? Just curious.
First thing is, I'm a huge fan of the tube stop. I love transit maps. So it's one of my favorite things, and it's something we really, try to incorporate into our resources. We have a link to the tube stop on our resources to share. So that's a big part of the resources we socialize to our stakeholders. I think in terms of what makes things stick, three things always just come to mind is, clear and concise communication pathways, accessible resources, and just approachable group of SMEs. I think people want to know how they can reach you, what the next steps are, how to engage with us. They want to know where they can find trusted information, tools. They don't want to read, I think the too long didn't read is a big thing. We have so many things to read on a day-to-day. Let's make it easy. And I think TubeStop is one of those resources that makes things visual and accessible.
And
And I
they know where
think
to go to find. Yeah.
exactly, yeah. And having accessible team, and I think one thing that's been really exciting is just the team, Suna's put together. And I think that goes a long way because that's culture setting. If you have a really collaborative team that's forward thinking, that trickles down to all stakeholders. So I think those are the things that make things stick. And then to your, kind of second question about thinking long term, I think that's what we always, will try to do is any of these solutions and strategies, we obviously want to fix short term. I think just the nature of things is you'll never escape like a reactive solution because there's always problems that are arising that we need fixed yesterday. But how do we intentionally think about solutions, platforms, processes to bring in that we know may apply to future studies in addition to fixing the now? So, and I think that harkens back to kind of my point of intentional preparation is Let's not just take things case by case, but let's really, take a case by case, but then think, okay, can this be used a year, 2 years down the line?
Right, not dissimilar to practicing medicine or being a scientist, right? We would love everything to just be what it is and it never changes, but that's not the reality of anything, right? Fantastic.
It's hard to imagine, but we're almost out of time. So, Amir, I'm going to give you the privilege of the last question, and I'll just do a couple of wrap-up things. So, how do you want to bring this one home?
I'd love to ask Suna and Patrick if you had to give advice to another team in another company if they were doing something similar. Do you have any advice for them, and would you do anything differently? That'd be my last question.
I can start, Patrick,
Yeah.
please jump in. I think the biggest thing we have learned so far, and also advice to others, that adoption doesn't happen, change doesn't happen through big announcements overnight. It happens through experience, through learning cycles. We say in digital medicine, the common soft skill we have in our team is resilience. There are always setbacks, there's always problems, but just focusing on the results, execution, and can-do attitudes makes a big difference. The other thing I think Amgen is doing well, it's not my approach as the head of digital medicine, but Amgen's approach is starting small, test and learn, take risks with the less risky projects or low profile company projects, and then learn and move to more complex projects. It would be my advice to our colleagues. And medical affairs is really a good, let's say, partner, collaborator, if they understand the value of these approaches. I believe there is a good opportunity there. Patrick?
Yeah, I agree with everything. I think it's about being adaptable, agile, setting that culture of, if there's an obstacle, like how do we work around it collectively? We have a lot of really smart, engaged people at Amgen, and we're really fortunate for that. And I think it's one of the things that we always say is it's in the messaging we said it doesn't matter what your title is, everyone has this expertise, and everyone pitches in. It kind of feels like a startup, a lot of old good memories. But to that point, it's like that, very collaborative internally with digital medicine, but then collaborative with our key functions. In terms of what we could do differently, I don't know. I think that that's kind of a question to think about, because we're constantly building right now. There's a lot of learnings, we're evolving. So I think that's kind of one of the things where we'll do a retrospective one day and think about it. But right now, it's kind of rolling with the changes and a lot of new learnings each day.
Such a great way to summarize things. Like you're iterating in practice, you're learning by doing with your colleagues, and you're inviting everyone to learn along with you. So it's really a case study in how to drive change management using both the methodology, Suna, but also the empathy and humanity of the folks who are in your team. So bravo, bravo to you. And I want to say thank you very much for being brave, sharing your story, inviting people to learn from you, your role models to all of us. And thank you for including us in that. I also want to give just a little bit of a thank you to the audience for being here and for the people who will listen to this after it drops to the platform. If you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out to us. And now I'm just going to give you a little heads up because on the 30th of March, we're going to have a all circles Olympic-like event. So Patrick mentioned he uses the circles as a way to engage with other people who are curious. We invite you to join that conversation to learn about what do we talk about. How do you get your ideas included? What circles are missing, actually? And then just keep your eyes open on LinkedIn because I think we're going to have a very special guest in a couple of weeks to talk about patient recruitment, and has it actually changed? Are we getting any better at it? All these amazing new technologies are out there, but what are they actually doing for us in terms of patient recruitment? As always, if you have an idea about an episode, drop us a line, DM me on LinkedIn, send an email to any of us here, and I wish you a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Great weekend, all.
Bye-bye.